Okay, we get started with Q&A Tuesdays. It's Tuesday, it's 2:06, and it's time for Q&A Tuesday. This time, Marcellus Shale Drilling from an environmental aspect. Jim Bonner is with us. He's the executive director of the Audubon Society of Western Pennsylvania. And we're not talking about birds. Well, not talking about birds per se. This may come into it. It's about the environmental impact. And I was just talking with Jim just a few moments ago. Let me set this up. Now, again, this is for you to ask questions. I don't want to hear speeches. This is an opportunity for you to ask and get an answer about something that, in this case, Marcellus Shale Drilling, and how it affects the environment, how it affects the land. So that's what we're discussing. 866-391-1020 is the number, and Dollar Bank Instant Access. You can send us a question that way by going to our website, kdkradio.com, or you can go to Mike Pintech Facebook page. Okay, so Jim, just to set this up, the Audubon Society owns property, nature reserves in the area.
Yes, we do.
Right. So as a result of that, you needed to get up to speed on drilling and Marcellus Shale Drilling. Why?
Correctly. It all started actually before the Marcellus boom really hit, when there were traditional gas wells being drilled. And we were acquiring some additional property and easements, conservation easements, on some neighboring land around our Todd Nature Reserve, which is in southeastern Butler County.
Okay.
And Todd dates back to the early 40s when we first acquired that property. And it has 6 miles of trails, and a lot of people go out there for, bird walks and other environmental education programs. And when we were acquiring an easement, we found out it actually had a lease on this farm. There was a neighboring dairy farm. The farmer was having a lot of trouble. It looked like he may have to sell the farm. It was a fifth-generation dairy farm. So we stepped in and bought the easement on the property, which meant he still owned it, could still farm on it, but we owned the rights to the development. So it couldn't be subdivided or used for non-agricultural purposes. Kind of a win-win situation. When we got to closing, right before that, we found out he had signed a gas drilling lease. Mm. And originally, we had said there would not be resource extraction done on the property. It would just be agricultural use. But the lease was already signed, but we still wanted to go ahead with the easement. So we ended up being a 50% stakeholder in that drilling lease.
So you had to learn about
so we did immediately
okay, about fracking and all of that.
But from the beginning to the end of everything dealing with drilling. And after we had acquired that easement, the company that had held the lease approached us and said, well, we'd like to talk with you about the rest of your land, whether you might consider gas wells on those. And the immediate assumption is absolutely, why would we even think about that. Don't be crazy. It's a nature reserve. But we did a little bit of soul searching, kind of looked in the mirror and said, you know what? We accept money from gas producers in the form of grants or contributions to do our education work. We all use natural gas to heat our nature center, our families and employees, cook with it, heat with it. It would be the height of NIMBY, not in my backyard, to automatically reject it without investigating it.
Okay, so but obviously the point was that it had to be environmentally friendly. So then, okay.
Absolutely.
So you went into research on that?
We did. We wanted to really know about it, not just reject it out of hand.
Okay. That's where your expertise comes from the environmental aspect, the safety issues of Marcellus Shale Drilling. Jim Bonner, Executive Director of the Audubon Society of Western Pennsylvania on Q&A Tuesdays. Let's start with Milt. Milt, you are on KDKA. Hello.
Okay, thank you. Hey, I have a question. Let's say you have three plots of ground. Well, this person has 100 acres, and they each have 100 acres. The people on the two ends, they have Marcellus Shale come in and drill their land. But the person in the center refuses to have them come in. Number one, how do they stop them from taking gas off of his land, and what impact would that have on his property?
Well, there are a couple of things regarding what would be gas migration or the possibility of taking someone else's gas. One big difference with Marcellus Shale than the traditional shallow wells is that's a very, very dense rock formation. And that's why you hear so much about hydraulic fracturing or fracking, is because you have to do that to get the gas to move. And although if you were to drill down and come within a few feet of someone else's property line, you might get a little bit of their gas, but it's not like it would all migrate easily through the rock into their well hole. So the amount that moves back and forth, it's not a big open air pocket that you can just siphon it out of. You actually have to go and bore through it and do the fracturing to be able to capture it. Now, if there was enough wells all completely surrounding your perimeter, you would probably lose some of your gas, but it's not as if they could siphon it all off. The other part that comes into this has been some discussion about forced pooling. And that is, I'd like to think of the analogy of building the high-rise building, and the one little guy is holding out his plot, and so they build a giant building around his cabin sitting on
the street. And that's been done, actually.
That has been done. Yeah. And there's talk about, well, if once you have a certain percentage of property signed, can you actually force the remaining, the holdout one, into accepting a lease? And there you're really stepping into a variety of property rights issues and a whole host of other things. In some states, you can do that. Pennsylvania, that's not on the books yet, but I know last year when it was being discussed on the severance tax, there had been some proposals to require forced pulling.
All right, we're talking about Marcellus shale gas and drilling and the effect on the environment, the effect on your land, and the water. We also add that to the mix, the drinking water, the groundwater, the lakes and streams. And why does Jim Bonner know all this stuff? Because he's executive director of the Audubon Society of Western Pennsylvania, and you actually have wells on your property at this point?
We do not have any wells on our property.
But you have leases.
We do have. They have leases that have been signed on that were a part holder on some leases that have not been drilled yet.
Okay, but they could be drilled
they
at
could
any,
be drilled.
Any day. Okay,
mm-hmm.
So you've had to look into this. That's why you have the expertise on this, to protect the wildlife on these preserves. Our number here is 866-391-1020. This is not for me. Q&A Tuesdays is for you to ask questions of the expert guest that we have with us on any given Tuesday. And today we're doing Marcellus shale gas drilling from the environmental side of this. And I can assure you that in future weeks on Q&A Tuesdays, we will have the industry representatives join us as well so that you can ask questions of them. Norman in Waynesburg, you're up on KDKA.
Yeah, thanks for knowing top to bottom what's going on here, Mike. Seriously, there was a front page article, Sunday's Post, Pittsburgh Post, about fracking, and Mr. Casey, the senator, wants to pass the act. He's trying to get it legislation put through, the Fracking Responsibility and Awareness of Chemicals Act.
Mm-hmm.
Would your guest be aware of that? And possibly, would he know whether that could shut down the industry temporarily if they try to pass this on a federal level?
Okay. Are you familiar with that?
I'm familiar with it in the broad sense. I haven't read all the language
of the actual bill.
Exactly.
Okay, but you can address the fracking fluids and those kinds of things and talk about that. You can do that?
Yeah, it's a little bit of that.
All right.
Yep.
Tell you what, we're going to pick that up right where we left off in just a few moments. 866-391-1020. Dollar Bank Instant Access. Send a question that way by going to kdkradio.com, or you can use my Facebook page, Mike Pintech, on Facebook. It's Q&A Tuesday, and we're talking about Marcellus shale drilling from the environmental side of things. The executive director of the Audubon Society of Western Pennsylvania with us, Jim Bonner. We're not talking about birds. We're talking about the effect on wildlife and the land of Marcellus shale gas drilling. Okay, just before we took the break, the question was asked about Senator Casey's proposal about fracking fluids and you know, I guess basically revealing what's in the fracking fluids. And you were going to answer that question.
Yeah, we're going to address that. And there's a bit of confusion and misunderstanding regarding the fracking fluids. And although we may not know the exact mix of chemicals that are in there or the concentrations or total volumes being used, there is knowledge of the actual chemicals themselves. And that has been that way for quite a while, in that MSDS, the material handling data sheets that are required to be on site at all drilling sites. So if you were to go there and investigate, or someone was to do an inspection, you can go right up to a log and see what's there. Now, would it be more convenient if it was posted on a website or exact mixes that were given? Certainly, I would strongly support that and like to see that. But it's not unfindable information. It's just not as convenient as it could be. But you do see now some companies taking a more proactive approach because they know this will at some point be required to be more transparent, that are voluntarily providing that information, whether it's on their websites or through other media. They're saying, okay, these are the things we're using. You don't have to go and find them somewhere else.
Okay, the reason Jim is here is with the Audubon Society Executive Director because the Audubon Society has nature reserves that could be impacted by Marcellus Shale gas drilling in the future. Let's go to Paul in Mars on KDKA. Paul, go ahead.
Yes, sir. First of all, I applaud you for taking the time to research and evaluate the situation. Are you, in a nutshell, in favor of the gas drilling or not in favor of it? The second question is, do you feel it's a better alternative than nuclear? And at that point, I'll just listen to your response. Thank you.
Okay, two good questions.
Yes. The first one is it has to give that qualified answer. And in general, I'm very in favor of natural gas exploration for a number of different reasons. First of all, it's the cleanest of all fossil fuels. And until such time there is something other than fossil fuels readily available, I would support its use, particularly over other forms. And in our area, that's particularly coal.
Right.
It's clearly better for the environment than coal is. We all use natural gas in our daily lives. The Audubon does. All of our staff members do. If I could get a natural gas-powered car conveniently, I would probably have one because it would be better than using, petrochemicals. So for those reasons, we do support it. It's also local. And unlike all most other fuels, it doesn't have to be shipped from across the country or particularly out of the country to get here. And it's abundant. So for all those reasons, it's a good thing if done right.
And that's the key.
And
that's why you've done so much research because, again, your nature reserves could be impacted.
It could be impacted, as can the quality of life of all wildlife as well as people throughout the region. This is a tremendous opportunity. I was talking during the break with you about the fact that it's kind of like winning a lottery ticket or getting a lottery ticket and winning. We didn't buy the ticket, but it was handed to us. And right now we're trying to decide what kind of lottery winner we want to be. We all hear the stories about the big Mega Million winners who get their ticket, run down to the store the next day, cash it in, go out and buy a new mansion, five cars, spend all the money. 18 months later, they're either broke or in rehab or in jail, and their life is ruined. The other lottery winner takes this. He calls his tax accountant, his advisor, probably his clergy, his family members, sets it all up, does the research, gets it going. 3 months later, 6 months later, whatever, turns in the ticket, and they, their community, and their family is set for the rest of their lives and for generations thereafter. Right now, Pennsylvania has the opportunity to be a smart lottery winner and do things right.
Or a very stupid lottery.
Or a very stupid one.
Okay, so which, one? I don't normally do follow-up questions, but I'm going to in this case. Which direction do you think Pennsylvania is headed at this moment?
Thus far, we're bridging the gap in a bad way. We haven't done all the things and done all the preparation that we could do, but we are still kind of cashing in some of the money. Permits are being issued, wells are being drilled, but we really haven't addressed some of the key issues in the way that we need to.
All right, Arthur in North Huntington on KDKA on Q&A Tuesdays with the Executive Director of the Audubon Society of Western PA, Jim Bonner.
Good afternoon. I appreciate you taking my call. We've just built a new school out here, and it wasn't a year later that they put a gas well. I haven't obviously measured it, but it looks like 300 or 400 yards from the school building. Now, I'm not knowledgeable enough to have an opinion on the gas drilling, but it does concern me that we might have compromised the safety, not only the $14 million we've spent for the school, but compromised the safety of the students for the revenue from the gas well. I'm concerned about that. Could you help me there?
Sure. One challenge anytime you're setting up any regulations or looking at anything is we tend to use very quantifiable metrics, 300 feet away, or there are regulations that say if it's within 500 feet or 1,000 feet, you should do something or not do something. And most sites are fairly unique, and it's hard to speak generically about any site, whether that's safe or not. In general, this is an industrial activity. And we need to think of it as an industrial activity. And there are other comparable things out there. Would you put a cement plant 300 feet from a school? Or would you put a foundry?
Well, okay, hold that thought, because I need to take a break here. I want to pursue this with you, about the proximity to residences, to residential areas, to schools, churches, those kinds of things. All right? So we'll do that in just a moment. It is Q&A Tuesdays, and Jim Bonner with us, Executive Director of the Audubon Society of Western Pennsylvania. The subject is the safety and environmental impact of Marcellus shale drilling here in Pennsylvania. Okay, it is Q&A Tuesdays, and our witness, our expert witness on the witness stand, Jim Bonner, Executive Director of the Audubon Society of Western Pennsylvania. And no, we're not talking about birds per se today. We're talking about Marcellus shale gas drilling and how it might affect the wildlife and affect the environment. And why is Jim Bonner, the executive director of the Audubon Society, interested in this? Because their nature reserves could be impacted by Marcellus shale drilling, and so he has learned, and his organization has learned, a lot about it. And that's why he's here as an expert on the environmental side of this. And yes, we will have the industry come in at some future date. 866-391-1020 is the number. This is your opportunity to ask a question, get it answered unfiltered. Okay? Otherwise, I'll ask the questions. Dollar Bank Instant Access, you can send a question that way by going to kdkradio.com. And you can also send a question, if you wish, by going to our website, or my website at Facebook, Mike Pintek on Facebook. Okay? All right, Jim, follow up on the question that was asked of you about the a well being drilled near a school, brand new school, North Huntington.
Right.
Oh, wait a minute. That's my fault. Go ahead.
As we were talking, drilling really is an industrial activity. Certainly when they first come in with the rigs to do this, particularly Marcellus rig, it takes up about a 5-acre footprint. It's a 24-hour day, you know, 7-day-a-week operation until they're done.
Really noisy.
Very noisy. Yeah. And it's not the machinery there. It's the thousands of trucks coming and going from it. It's all the other activity. It's the 4-story tall rig that gets built for drilling this. The amount of compressors that are taken to do the hydraulic fracturing is tremendous. So it is an industrial activity, and certainly those types of activities are incompatible with certain places. I mean, if you were at a, right adjacent to a hospital, right by a school, somewhere like that, again, depending on when and how it's done, would certainly be an incompatible space use. Very similarly, there are places, maybe in some of our state forests, other fragile lands where that type of interruption, that kind of interference, that kind of disruption is just incompatible for what it's there. Even on a short-term basis, that can pose, permanent challenges. One area that I think about a lot is the Clowdersport area, which is considered one of the darkest areas on the eastern seaboard anywhere. And people go up there to do stargazing. That by doing Marcellus shale drilling, particularly when you do the flaring, there's no way to do that doesn't light up the sky. And if anyone saw the well that was done up by the Pittsburgh Mills right at the beginning of the year, I mean, the sky was lit up for days while they were flaring off the gases. That's an intrinsic activity with drilling. There's no way to avoid doing
it. But does that go away? I mean, you're talking. What was this Clowdersport? Did you say?
Yeah.
What you're talking about? There's no light pollution up there, so it's easier to stargaze.
At this point, there is not any light pollution. But although that individual well may only be a short period of time, there are an unknown number of wells going in over an extended period of time. So there is a chance you will always have it lit up just in a sequential mode.
So going back to his question then about the schools, about this particular school, so in the short term, it's incompatible, would you say? Or that's what I'm hearing you say. But once the well is drilled and the gas is now being extracted, most of that equipment and noise and all of the other goes away. Is it then still inappropriate use or inappropriate siting?
Well, that's where the community and the school itself has to make that decision if they consider that incompatible.
But from a purely
environmental standpoint, once a well is drilled and what you have left is what they sometimes refer to as the Christmas tree or the small green stand, perhaps a small tank to catch some brine water that's coming out, that can be, hidden, that can be disguised, it can be secured so that it's safe, again, depending on the campus that the school grounds is in, how it's set up. It can probably be made to be compatible with the use. Now, that's assuming, as I put it that way, that everything was done legally and to the best of their abilities. One of the biggest challenges in discussing this issue is that I look at three levels of challenges. One are those issues that are intrinsic to the process. That's the flaring. That's the thousands of trucks that have to come and go. That's the noise involved with it. There's no way to do this without those. But you also have accidental problems, and you have illegal problems. And I think we have to separate those and look at them and make sure we have solutions or contingencies for them. Accidents can and will happen. We know that. We've seen that from, you know, oil, gas, drilling. We've seen that in traditional wells throughout the area. There have been numerous explosions, fires, leaks that have happened. There has to be adequate safeguards in place, though, if and when there is an accident, there is an appropriate way of addressing it. Meaning if that well head happens to be near the main entrance and egress to the school grounds, I would consider that to be inappropriate. If it's on the back end of the school grounds where there is not typically traffic going, then it may be more compatible. So it's really a challenge of looking at it and doing it right, so that you're not putting unnecessary risk to the people around.
Okay. And another call, I just realized we hadn't answered a question that another caller had asked you. It asked if you were in favor of it, and you said you gave a qualified yes, I think is fair to say. Mm-hmm. He also wanted to know how you felt about nuclear energy from an environmental standpoint.
From an environmental standpoint, I think that, like so many environmental questions, there's always the caveat to it. Nuclear energy is a very viable way of producing fuel. It's technically, Japan aside right now, the safest out there over the long run. There have been very, very few accidents that have ever happened, any escapes of any type of contamination. It's a can be a proven technology there. But, again, we have to be planning for the accidents, the contingency plans, because when something does go wrong there, it can be catastrophic.
Well, in Japan, though, you had an earthquake, you had a tsunami, and now you had all this other stuff.
Overwhelming. But as all things, I think it can continue to evolve and can continue to become a good, viable source. The biggest issue we have to address is spent fuel, and how are we addressing that? And unfortunately, there's not been a good answer to that yet.
So while the plant's operating, it's environmentally friendly, but the spent fuel is the environmental issue.
Correct.
You. Okay. Jim Bonner is Executive Director of the Audubon Society of Western Pennsylvania. Questions for Jim, and our number, we're talking about Marcellus Shale gas drilling, 866-391-1020. And actually, my young warden producer, Robert Sir, wanted to know a question, or wanted to know the answer to what I think is actually a very good question. So what is it?
Well, it's a two-part question. I guess for the average homeowner, what is, for just one well on a property, what is the average size that it will take up once, I guess, construction is finished? And then what is the, you know, proposed financial reward that can come from that well? And do those wells, can they ever run dry?
Well, maybe to address the size question first, a traditional gas well, the shallow wells that there are 100,000 of throughout the state, are a relatively small footprint when being installed. Maybe an acre to 2 acres is all it takes, including the roadway to get to it and all the support areas. Once done, it is very small. We're talking about 100 square foot.
You're talking about Marcellus Shale gas now.
This is traditional first. Is very small. Most people have driven by finished traditional gas wells and didn't know that's what they were driving by, because they can blend in so well to the background. A Marcellus Shale pad, when they're first installing it, is about a 5-acre footprint.
So it's much larger.
It is much larger. Most of the times you try to keep it just under 5 acres, because there are some regulatory and other issues you have to do. Once you get above 5 acres, you have to do certain plans. So most of the time they try to keep it at 5 acres or under. And again, it's a big industrial complex while it's going on.
Okay, so once it's done and the gas is now flowing.
Once it's done, it is fairly small. Again, we're talking only a few hundred square foot, maybe a 20 by 20 foot.
So it's not something like big sticking out of the ground that you would notice for miles.
The thing that most people they refer to as a Christmas tree. It's a metal structure that could only be anywhere from 10 to 15 feet tall, maybe less, and is not overly obtrusive.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Although you do still have to always maintain a clear area around it so it couldn't become fully wooded. You have to maintain a road to get in there to service it.
And the value of the amount of money that could be expected to the landowner from a well?
It's quite variable. There are two components anytime you're talking money. One is a lease a bonus or an upfront amount, which right now can be, you know, in this area about $2,000 or more per acre. So if you had a 100-acre farm or 100-acre plot, that could be $200,000 to sign. And then you're going to have royalties over the life of the well. And state minimum royalty is 12.5%, but 18 to 20% royalties are not unheard of.
So in dollar figures?
On a 100-acre, over the course of it, it could be $2 million
or more over
30 years or 40 years.
All right, let me take a quick break. We'll take some take your calls coming up next. It's Q&A Tuesdays. Jim Bonner of the Audubon Society of Western Pennsylvania, Environmental Impact of Marcellus Shale Drilling. All right, we're talking with the Executive Director of the Audubon Society of Western Pennsylvania, Jim Bonner, and he is here as an expert on the environmental impact of Marcellus Shale Gas Drilling in Pennsylvania. And Helen writes on our Dollar Bank Instant Access, this is a good question. You've mentioned many positive aspects of natural gas drilling. What are some negatives, specifically dealing with the environmental concerns, but also with local economics? I don't want to get into the economics because that's for another day. What about what are the negatives?
Well, there certainly are a tremendous number of potential negatives. I mentioned the fact that it's a local abundant source. It's fairly clean, but the extraction process can be problematic. I mean, certainly it is water intensive. The amount of water needed to drill an average well is about 5 million gallon, of which a million of it comes back as what they call flowback water, which is contaminated. It has both the chemicals that are put into it going down, lubricants and algicides and bacterial side items, but also a variety of things that it finds underground, including, as we were reading not too long ago, radioactive material potentially coming back up. So that does need to be treated or addressed. One of my biggest concerns, one of our biggest concerns, is not so much what happens right at the well site itself. I mean, that, again, is a highly technical, expertise-driven procedure. But all of those thousands of trucks that are going somewhere carrying that water, each one of them is a potential for an accident to happen. Even putting aside the potential for illegal activities, which we know has happened, but all it takes is one of those turning over and dumping its water into a stream or a creek or some other protected area, and then you're going to have some devastation from there. So that is one of our biggest concerns.
One follow-up on that is, speaking of the water, a lot of people seem to have this concern about this fracking fluid getting into groundwater or drinking water. Now, from your research on this, what are your findings?
Here, it's not, at least from all of my research on it, it is not so much the fracking process itself that causes the most damage or the potential damage. It is the initial well drilling, the boring in the first 500 to 800 feet. Is where problems will happen. As you drill down from the surface, you're going through a lot of different layers, and you're going through the water table at that point. Where you do the fracking is down 5,000 to 8,000 feet and maybe a mile out. The activities happening there, in general, won't cause a lot of problems. But as that water comes back up, it has to go through that last bit of the straw. And if you didn't put that straw in correctly, then you're going to have leakage there into the water table and into other areas. So probably using the analogy of the BP oil spill in the Gulf, it wasn't down where the oil is being extracted. It was what happening right at or near the surface that caused the leakage. If you don't have them encased, and right now you can use anywhere from 3 to 5 concentric casing, each one with good cement around it. If those seals aren't good, that's where the fracking fluid is going to come out.
Okay.
So it's not the fracking a mile down that bothers me as much as what happens right at or near the surface.
Joni, in Park, where is it? Park Place? Is that where you are?
Who, me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm in Park Place.
Okay, you're on KDKA.
Oh, hi. How are you?
Yeah, my name's Joni, and I just turned on the radio, and I heard Jim Bonner talking, and, you know, it's funny because I thought you were an environmentalist. In fact, you were, and again, I didn't hear what you said earlier. I did hear the last 3 minutes, and just the last few things you were saying led me to wonder why you're supporting this, but I don't. And
well, Joni, I'm not, you know, I said no speeches. Do you have a question for him?
A question?
Yes.
Oh, I thought this was a discussion show. I'm sorry.
No, well, it's a discussion show, except on Q&A Tuesdays, it's a question. And I'd be glad to let you do a speech. Are you questioning his environmental credentials? Is that what you're asking here?
No, I'm asking about some of the statistics, some of the arguments that he's made is what I'm asking about.
Well, I'm
but
not...
I can ask a specific question, okay?
Yeah, go ahead.
You said that... there would be 4 to 5 million gallons for one well that would go in, and this would include 80 tons of chemicals, right? 0.44% of it is 80 tons of chemicals. Now, if most of the fluid stays in the shale, what happens to all the chemicals that are down there, and how do we know that they're not going to get into the environment?
All right.
And
all right. Well, I got to leave him time to answer because we're almost out of time.
First, I don't know that I specified any particular amounts or volumes going in.
You did not.
But we'll even take your numbers of chemicals going down into it. We will have to assume that some portion of that will stay down there, and we have to assume that some portion will come up, and we have to treat and think of those separately. From the chemicals coming back up, which is obviously the most immediate concern, what are we doing with those? And that gets back to the treatment, the recycling of the water, and as I mentioned, particularly the shipment of that water. I'm so concerned with, Bob the truck driver on his 15th trip that night dozing off happening that's my
and
most
And you're also
concerned
about the storage of it.
And the storage and long-term use of it. Now, with regards to what's down in the strata down below, that does pose some risk, as anything can pose a risk. But when we look at the hierarchy of risk, I personally put that a little bit lower.
Okay.
One reason the gas is down there and so hard to get out is that's a fairly imperviable surface and material, and deep well injection is a way of actually disposing of materials.
Jim Bonner, thank you for joining us today on Q&A Tuesdays. Jim is the executive director of the Audubon Society of Western Pennsylvania, and the subject, of course, was the environmental impact of Marcellus Shale gas drilling on KDKA.